I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up on today's late edition of Undivided, Governor Jay Inslee, even when confronted with a smoking gun, refuses to acknowledge that he misled Washingtonians when it came to the impact the carbon tax would have on gas prices.
Do you acknowledge that Washingtonians were intentionally or unintentionally misled about the extent to which the cap and trade program would raise gas prices?
No, I don't accept that at all, because the term misled connotes some intentional act, and that's simply not what happened here.
Plus, faced with six initiatives that would undo some key Democratic policies, House Speaker Lori Jenkins has some choice words about the initiative process.
I'm very saddened when I think about why the initiative process was established in this state.
That and much more coming up tonight on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We need booze for tonight.
We
because
do.
If we're after dark and a modest amount.
I already had a technical amount, error. Jeez.
I know. Nicole's a failure. We got this when the Tenino parents won their fight against the sex predators.
Mm-hmm. At their party.
So thank you, Sandstone Distillery. Here's a free commercial for you. Look, so we are doing a late show today, which is unusual, so maybe we have some folks watching live that typically don't, because today was the legislative preview in Olympia that is done every year for the media, and it's a really great event. I actually haven't been in several years, so I got to go back and kind of play reporter today, because I'm not a journalist anymore. I mean, I once was a journalist, I think a pretty good one, but I don't often go out to press conferences anymore, and I thought the reason I went today, because it was from 8 a.m. to noon, is I'm sure that Jay Inslee's not ever going to agree to another one-on-one interview with me. And I thought, this is my only chance to talk to the guy. I did. That is coming up. We had an interesting exchange on gas prices. So before that happened today, there was a huge story that broke this morning that I think kind of set the tone for a lot of the questions that were asked of Governor Jay Inslee and some of the legislative leaders. And it came from our friend Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center, who has been, I think, the single consistent source of information on how Governor Jay Inslee's cap and trade program has resulted directly in Washington State, for the first time ever over the summer, having the highest gas prices in the country. Todd Myers accurately predicted, almost to the penny, what the carbon tax would do at the pump. And this whole time that has been debated, Governor Jay Inslee wants to act as if, well, no, it's not. You know, he said it'll increase it pennies. And when it increased it 45 cents, as Todd Myers predicted, Governor Inslee has still found ways to deny that. To deny that he knew that that would happen, which has always been odd, because the point of the cap and trade program and putting a price on carbon and auctioning off carbon credits, the point of it is to make gas more expensive. So for him to deny it, it's been really strange, deny that he knew it would increase gas that much. Well, today, this morning, 8 a.m., Todd Myers put out the smoking gun. And it's actually interesting, and we'll talk to Todd in a moment about this. He kind of had the smoking gun all along. He just forgot about it, because it was in 2014. So you remember, Governor Jay Inslee's been talking about a carbon tax for a very, very long time. And so this is an issue that has been discussed and debated before. Well, it turns out back when it was debated in 2014, Governor Jay Inslee's own chief policy advisor said explicitly, this is going to raise gas prices. We want to be transparent about this. Here's the article from Todd Myers. The headline, documents show Governor Inslee knew a tax on CO2 would significantly increase gas prices. Despite claiming for the past few years that his tax on CO2 emissions wouldn't increase gas prices, documents from his administration show Jay Inslee has long known taxing CO2 emissions would significantly increase gasoline and natural gas prices. In fact, the governor's own chief policy advisor and the senior policy advisor of a left-wing environmental group said the policy would increase gas prices, even saying that was the intended goal. Is that gun smoking enough for you already? It says, the documents from the governor's office are the clearest evidence yet that Governor Inslee and others in his administration knew they were lying when they claimed the new tax on CO2 emissions wouldn't increase gas prices. So not only is there you know, the documents to back this up, that the governor's own senior policy advisor, a man named Matt Stuerwald, not only did he predict a 44 cent increase per gallon if they auctioned off CO2 at exactly the same rate they're auctioning it off today. Not only did he predict it to the penny 9 years ago, math there, it's late, math at night, I'm just going to blame the time of day. Not only did he predict it 9 years ago, he actually went before members of the legislature and told them that he thought it was really important for them to be transparent, which is fascinating. 2014, Governor Inslee's chief policy advisor is like, hey, you know, we like this policy, but we do want to be transparent. It's going to increase gas prices by 44 cents a gallon, if not more. He also acknowledged something that was obvious then and is still obvious to us today, that in putting the cap and trade system in place, it was likely, probable, very likely that gas and oil companies would not absorb the cost and would pass that cost along to you and I. Here's the chief policy advisor in 2014 saying that.
This assumes that the costs, so this is half of your question, I think, this assumes that the costs are just passed right on at the pump to consumers. Right? So this is that the oil companies do not somehow absorb some of this cost.
So it seems that Inslee's chief policy advisor in 2014, when they first started talking about cap and trade, acknowledged openly and honestly all the things that Governor Jay Inslee is denying now. So it is the smoking gun we've been looking for this entire time. There is no way around that. It's not some right-wing think tank, political talking head podcast lady that's just saying, oh, Governor Jay Inslee should have known all these things. It's his own staff whose job it was to brief lawmakers on what the implications would be of the cap and trade program for Washingtonians. You guys, I'm literally going crazy. And this is why it's so good. This is why the whiskey is important tonight. In moderation, everything in moderation. I don't want YouTube to demonetize us. So I'll also note, in case you're thinking, well, maybe Inslee, you know, 2014 is a long time ago. Maybe his policy, there's a lot of stuff going on in the state. He's not watching every briefing his policy advisors do in the legislature. Well, interestingly, also something none of us saw, and I'll take blame for that too, this was covered in the news. There was an article from Crosscut by an independent writer named John Stang. The headline, this is from September 25th, 2014. A carbon tax would push states' gasoline prices higher. It was in black and white. It says, if Governor Jay Inslee pursues a carbon emission tax, Washington's gasoline prices could increase by as much as 44 cents by the end of the decade. And he talks about the meeting that Pat Stuerwald, Inslee's executive director for policy, briefed members of the Telecommunications Committee, Environment and Energy. And in this article from 2014, it has that 44 cent prediction. So think about this for a second. There is a long list of people, Democrats, Republicans, members of Governor Jay Inslee's staff, experts on this issue, who estimated almost to the penny the exact same thing, 45 to 50 cents a gallon. You have the WashDOT whistleblower, the guy whose job it was to forecast gas prices for the state of Washington. He did it for 5 years. He predicted that the cap and trade system would raise gas prices 45 to 50 cents. And he says he was told to shut up about it, to hide it. He ended up feeling forced to resign. So that's one person, one expert making that prediction. Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center predicted very early on that it would raise gas prices 44 to 45 cents a gallon, which ended up being spot on. What did Governor Jay Inslee say about him? Oh, he said it's halfway between hogwash and baloney, and it's just politically motivated. So you've got two with the same prediction. I guess they're both full of hogwash and baloney. Certainly, though, the governor can't say that about his own staff members. His chief policy advisor, he predicted the same thing in 2014. Is he halfway between hogwash and baloney? So it seems like there's an awful lot of people in the governor's orbit or in his direct staff who let him know, hey, this is what's going to happen. And for whatever reason, he and the Department of Ecology got together and came up with a different prediction entirely. And Governor Jay Inslee went out when they were debating cap and trade and told Washingtonians, what did he say? It'll be pennies. Oh, in fact, gas prices might even be lower than they are right now if we pass this thing. So that takes me to today. Governor Jay Inslee stood in front of the media. I will give him credit. He took a lot of questions. He even, you know what I didn't pull that I should have pulled? You know what was really funny? I was sitting there texting Nicole. I'm like, he's not going to call on me, obviously. You know, and I sat in the front row because I'm like, if he's going to ignore my questions, he's going to have to look through me to do it. And all the other people who had taken questions, you know, they kind of started with who was in their eyesight. Inslee gets up there and he says, we'll start way in the back.
He made quite the point of
it. He goes way in the back. And then he goes, we'll circle up to the front. And he literally makes a snake. And I'm the end of the tail of the snake. And I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking
It was comical.
There's no way this guy is going to get around to me.
I just wanted him to tell you you weren't the media so we could go with that.
Right.
You
know? He didn't do that. I'll give him credit. Yes, he took questions.
He took a question.
And he took my questions, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, I mentioned that Crosscut article from 2014 that said, hey, this will raise gas prices. Well, the journalist who wrote that was sitting next to me at today's press conference, John Stang. And he probably also forgot about that article he did in 2014, but he asked Governor Jay Inslee about this new smoking gun from the Washington Policy Center.
They're saying that in 2014, Matt Stewart-Walt gave a 44% per gallon estimate for the increase in gas prices. And they're saying you knew it was going to be more than pennies a gallon way back in 2014.
Well, no, that is not the situation. What happened is that we did what we should have done, which is to discuss with the public through our Department of Ecology the best estimates that we could come up with about any particular compliance costs that the industry would have. The Department of Ecology did a good faith estimate to try to determine that. It's like the weather report. You can't always predict the weather perfectly.
So this is not the first analogy that Governor Jay Inslee will use, comparing weather predictions to what is a very mathematical process that all these experts used to arrive at the figure of 45 cents. There's actually not a lot of room for error in the process. That's why everyone else's predictions are so in line with one another, and why Governor Inslee's prediction that he gave us of pennies seems so wrong and seems like such a lie is because it's not like predicting the weather. It's essentially what did the WashDOT whistleblower refer to it as? A sixth grade math equation. We'll get to more of that in a moment, but I'll also point out Inslee did something during this line of questioning that he often does, and that is try to inexplicably blame Republicans. It's how he just tries to distract from any criticism toward himself. So he goes on in this answer to John Stang blaming Republicans. He's like, well, our predictions might not have been right, but Republicans had predictions that were way out of left field. The only problem is the wild predictions that Governor Inslee attributed to Republicans were actually made by, his own chief policy advisor. Whoopsie.
The issue of prediction is they're not always totally correct, but I know whose predictions were not correct, which were the Republicans who ran around saying this is going to be like $1 or $1.50. Those predictions were inaccurate as well.
Just as a follow to what you had said there about Republicans pushing out this number, that it would be something crazy like $1.50 per gallon, that was actually the figure that was given by your chief policy advisor in 2014. And he based it off of, he gave a high and a low, and he based that off of the current CO2 prices. So based on ones that are very similar to state CO2 prices now, your own policy advisor's estimate was 44 cents a gallon to $1.46 a gallon.
Yeah, so that narrative doesn't really sound so good now. And I didn't have a question there for the governor. I just wanted to point out to him that he was blaming Republicans for a wild prediction that, in fact, his own chief policy advisor had made. Now, I got a chance after John Stang's question to talk to the governor about this. And this was a difficult, how do I want to place this? The governor has been asked about this a lot. for a long time. And he always finds a way to excuse what is and has been and continues to be clearly a lie. There just isn't denying it anymore. There are too many estimates that have been out there for too long. Now we know, going back 9 years, that said the same thing based on a simple math equation. And for some reason, you had Governor Inslee and the Department of Ecology throw out something no experts were saying, and they have stuck to it, come hell or high water. So I sort of approached this line of questioning with the governor as just trying to reason with him about why this continues to be such a frustrating topic for so many people.
I think one of the challenges with this whole conversation, why you're asked about it so often, I'm going to try again to sort of get clarity on it, is you have the central disagreement being, did the cap and trade program raise gas prices at the beginning of this year by around 45 cents a gallon? There are a lot of people whose estimates are almost exactly in line with that result. You had the Washington Policy Center that predicted, I believe it was 44 cents a gallon. You had your own senior policy advisor, and John Stang did a story on it I'm looking at right now in 2014 with the headline, cap and trade would increase gas prices. He predicted 44 cents a gallon. And then you had this WashDOT whistleblower whose job it's been for 30 years to be a state economist, to make these forecast predictions. He was doing that for WashDOT for 5 years. He predicted 45 to 50 cents a gallon. So when I see that, I'm like, either all of these experts, including your own staff, are wrong or you're wrong. Were you simply not aware of any of the other estimates that were consistent on 45 cents a gallon, including from your own staff? Why did you go with the estimate that was pennies, if not gas prices, would be lower when there were so many consistent estimates at 45 cents a gallon?
Look, I predict the Washington State Huskies are going to score 30 points next in Houston. That's my prediction. Now, if it turns out to be 36, will I have been sort of not done my job? No, I don't think so. If it turns out to be 24, will I have not done my job? Our job, and what we asked the Department of Ecology to do their best estimate to look at the most recent data, not 2014, but the most recent data of what they predicted could be in the realm of the compliance cost. That means how much people have to pay for the auction. Their best estimate was anywhere from 2 cents to 24 or 25 cents. And they conveyed that to the people in the legislature. And it was not dollars, it was cents. And that's what it turned out to be.
So because it was 45 cents, technically that's pennies, it's also deeply disturbing to me that the governor compares a mathematical process for predicting something as important as gas prices in the lives of Washingtonians to his ability to predict the outcome of a football game. It makes absolutely no sense. So I tried again to appeal sort of to any goodwill the governor has toward the hardworking people of Washington and asked him, frankly, what he would say to people who feel like they've been lied to by him for a long time about this.
For Washingtonians who are really struggling under the weight of increased gas prices. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you in terms of not everyone can make an accurate prediction, although a lot of people did manage to make a pretty accurate prediction, and it's not the one that you went with. So whether it was misled intentionally or unintentionally, when you were speaking to the media saying pennies, if not less than they are right now.
They're not going to see much higher gas prices, maybe even lower than they are today. Pennies. We're talking about pennies, potentially.
Do you acknowledge that Washingtonians were intentionally or unintentionally misled about the extent to which the cap and trade program would raise gas prices?
No, I don't accept that at all, because the term misled connotes some intentional act, and that's simply not what happened here. People did their best job they could looking at the data was available, one of which is the California experience. Now, the auction prices turned out to be higher than the California experience. They didn't predict that. And when you predict the weather, you're not entirely correct. So I don't think that's a fair characterization. But what I would say, there are certain things we do know for sure that are not arguable. Number one, the prices came down $1.50 from the highest point to when this bill came into effect. They came down $1.50. That's number one. Number two, they have come down $1 since October. And to try to say that there was massive increases caused by this, I don't think is accurate.
I think there's a lot of Washington drivers who would disagree with the governor's assessment. And the truth is that the Department of Ecology didn't do the best job it could. The Department of Ecology did Governor Inslee's bidding. They're the only ones who were willing to do Governor Inslee's bidding. In fact, a WASHDOT economist quit his job rather than do Governor Inslee's bidding. Now, you'll hear in those remarks that there were really two, if you could make sense of the word soup, two somewhat coherent retorts to it. One of them being that the governor says that, hey, this is kind of a guessing game. Okay. The other one, the governor saying that gas prices have come down. We had the highest gas prices in the summer, and people were like, oh, it's the cap and trade program, which it was and still is. But oh, now gas prices are down $1, $1.50. And he's suggesting that that's proof that the cap and trade isn't responsible for any sort of increases. So here's what we're going to do. Todd Myers, who's the expert on this with the Washington Policy Center, broke the news this morning. We asked him to come on and explain in detail, mathematically, why the retorts the governor is giving are simply nothing. The man of the hour, Todd Myers, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. It's good to see you.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed in you, to be honest.
Why?
Because you were sitting on the smoking gun this whole time. The smoking gun is from 2014. Did you just all of a sudden remember you had it?
Well, so actually a colleague of mine was doing some research and saying, hey, have you seen this article from 2014? And I was like, yes, I remember this now because I'm old and I went through that whole process in 2014. And so the minute I saw it, I said, yeah, I have these documents. And I went back and looked at them and then found a video of the testimony where the article talks about. So I had forgotten about it. It was 10 years ago. It's a combination of me being old and it being 10 years ago, but I did find it. And so, yeah, what it shows is that the governor has long known that this would increase gas prices, that his tax on CO2 emissions would increase gas prices. And it's not even just that, it's that we know exactly the amount they predicted, which is identical to the calculation that we've used for the last year and a half in predicting that amount. So it's not merely that they said, yes, it will increase gas prices. They said it will increase gas prices by exactly the amount we predicted.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to talk to you about. And if you have to be nerd out and use math or whatever, feel free. We'll try to keep up with you. But the governor likened predicting this to him predicting the Husky game. Like it's a complete guess out of thin air based on like some loose standards. But there's a reason why your prediction, his own chief policy advisor, the WASHDOT whistleblower, there's a reason why you all had the exact same prediction. It's because, like the WASHDOT whistleblower said, it's sixth grade math. So can you articulate why comparing this guessing to, oh, it's like guessing a football game. How am I expected to be exactly right? Can you compare, can you explain in detail why it's not the same thing?
Well, it's more like, you know, saying a touchdown could be anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 points. No, we know a touchdown is 7 points because that's what it is. It's just simply math. So every gallon of gas emits 19.6 pounds of CO2 when you burn it. And if you tax CO2 based on the amount, the tax is very straightforward. It's the tax times that 19.6 pounds. That's the way California does it. That's the way everybody does it. That's the way the governor's own 2014 report did it. That's why every time you say, okay, if the price is $52 a metric ton, right, then it calculates to this amount per gallon. Everybody does it the same way. Everybody comes up with the same answer, you know, including the governor's own people. So it's not a situation where you're just guessing the impact. And we know that because the state of Washington said, based a financial projection on if the price is this, here's how much money we will get. So it's not even, it's not just 2014, it is 2023 that the Office of Financial Management, which does the budgets, said, here's the math and here's how much revenue we're going to get. So the governor knows he's being dishonest. He's hoping that people get lost in the math and think that this is sort of, you know, shady. It's not. Everybody, including his own administration, 10 years ago and today, do the same thing.
Well, this is just guessing. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, if he's just being obtuse, if he is playing dumb, if he is just doesn't care in the final year of his term, whether he continues to perpetrate a lie that even his own staff has shown, you know, is just demonstrably false. What do you think it is? Like, unwillingness to admit you were wrong, or do they just not tell him anything and he doesn't know?
So here, this is my speculation. In both 2016 and 2018, there were taxes on CO2 emissions on the ballot. In 2018, the initiative was put on the ballot by the governor. And it is basically the same as the system we have now. It lost 58-42. My guess is that the governor and his staff simply decided that they, if they were honest about the impact on gas prices, they were never going to get this tax. So they simply started saying, nope, it's not going to have an impact on gas prices. We'll just blame the oil companies and we'll get it through. And that is exactly what has happened. And once you start down that path, you can't sort of do the, you know, Animal House thing and say, well, we lied to you. You know, you effed up. You trusted us. So because then, you know, that really makes them look foolish. So I think once they've painted themselves into a corner with that message, they have to stick with it, even though it's very clear they know it's wrong.
Well, and it also makes them look foolish. So, I mean, whether they came out and it said, hey, we were dishonest with you, or whether they keep pushing something that is so clearly a lie, they look foolish either way. You know, one of the retorts the governor gave, and I just, before you came on, played my exchange with him, is, oh, well, they're not saying anything now that gas is down, you know, $1.50 a gallon from last year. Can you also explain why that doesn't make any sense?
Well, gas goes up and down every year. It goes up during the summer and it goes down during the winter because of demand and a variety of other things. The video that is in our blog at WashingtonPolicy.org, they specifically address that. His policy advisor says that it would be 44 cents a gallon above the fluctuation of prices. So, you know, there's many things that influence prices, but taxes certainly do. So claiming that, well, gas prices went down, therefore we didn't have an impact, is nonsense. We are still much higher than Oregon. We were the same price as Oregon for many years, and now we're higher. So it's very clear what's going on. And the other irony, of course, is that when prices went up this summer, as they always do, he blamed the oil companies for their greed. But now that oil prices are coming down, what is it? Oil company generosity, benevolence? I mean, they just make it up as they go and will use any argument that's closest to hand to try to cover the fact that they're lying.
Yeah. And the thing that, you know, I remember when you guys came out with your analysis that turned out to be spot on, and the governor said it was halfway between hogwash and baloney. Was that it? But then when confronted today with the fact that his own policy advisor had the same prediction as you, you know, the WashDOT whistleblower who actually agrees with the program but didn't want to hide the calculations. So they're not halfway between hogwash and baloney, because that takes the politics out of it, right? When it's bipartisan people who are saying no, the same thing. Is there any end to this? I mean, you know, there's an initiative that's going through to repeal these parts of the CCA. I mean, where do we go from here? Because I think that he's been asked enough where there is almost no point in continuing to ask him the same question over and over and like try to admit that he lied.
Believe me, I am tired of talking about this issue.
Yeah.
You know, I am a policy analyst. I want to get good policy. And just getting the basic, having to spend all my time just getting basic facts right is really annoying. Because there are lots of things we can do to help the planet, whether it's on climate change or whether it's on wildlife or salmon or fires. Like, that's what we should be talking about. And having to spend all this time just dealing with political lies is so counterproductive, because it takes time away from focusing on the good things. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, this will go to the ballot and the voters will decide. Do they think that despite these lies, it's still worth it? Or do they think that it's costing too much and that there's a better way, or that they don't want it at all? That's what will happen. The legislature, who knows what they'll do this session to deal with it. It will almost certainly go to the ballot, and that's how this will be decided.
Yeah, and I think the key is just trying to get as many voters as we can to see that they're being lied to, and to see that it's not political, and that so many people have come to the same conclusion, and it's just plain as day. Todd Myers, I mean, you have really been just a rock star in all of this. I don't think we'd be having this conversation with the governor today had it not been for the work that you've done on this. So thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It's always nice to chat with you.
Yeah, so thank you, Todd, for dismantling with actual facts some of the arguments that Governor Inslee made. Nicole pulled the... By the way, if you thought the governor's responses were word soup, unhinged, I'm actually less upset about the governor's responses than I am about Lori Jenkins' responses to questions about the initiatives, the Speaker of the House. We're going to play that coming up after the break. Nicole, you pulled the now, we just thought this was funny because I'm sitting front row because I think that's the best way to get a question in. And this is the governor as soon as he walks up there.
Okay, let's start in the back. We'll start in the back, and then we'll work around. Well, let's just start in the back and work forward. Although we should not reward people for sitting in the back pews as they are, but we will. Who's got the farthest back question?
Today, so I can avoid Brandy as long as
possible. He should have just said, whoever is sitting furthest away from Brandy, we're going to start with you. It was funny. He took my question. Funny. He's fine. I give him a lot of credit. There were folks in the live stream being like, I'm shocked. But so he gets credit for that. All right. We'll have our segment Unbelievable coming up next with the harsh words that House Speaker Lori Jenkins has for the initiative process and the six initiatives that are now sitting before lawmakers or soon to be sitting before lawmakers. But first, if you have not taken the First Mark Challenge yet, what are you waiting for? I've been telling you guys it's a no-brainer. It doesn't cost any money, and you could save money and get better insurance. First Mark Insurance has been doing this for a long time. They're veteran-owned, local company, exceptional customer service. By taking the First Mark Challenge, not only are they going to look over your current insurance, see if they can't get you something for a better price, but you also have First Mark in your corner if something goes wrong. There's a lot of people dealing with insurance companies dropping them over even minor claims that they have. And that's when having an insurance broker in your corner really matters.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right, for a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, so navigating that situation yourself would be an absolute nightmare if you get dropped over something. So that's also where the advice is valuable. If you've got First Mark, you can say, you call them first. They're saying is call First Mark first. If it's not an emergency, and just ask them, hey, should I even file this? Is it worth it? And you can do a little risk-reward scenario there. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. All right. Speaker of the House Lori Jenkins apparently has a huge issue with people in this state exercising their rights under our Constitution to put a check on the legislature. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. One of the big issues for the legislature this year is going to be six voter initiatives that were sent to them. We've talked about those initiatives extensively on the show. I think all of them are common sense, but all of them would either seek to repeal existing Democratic policies that the party was really excited about or seek to stop other Democratic priorities that they might be working toward. So six initiatives, more than 400,000 people signed every single one of them. They're initiatives to the legislature, which means that over the next 60 days, once they're certified, they haven't been officially certified yet, but they're going to be, the legislature can adopt them or just let it go to voters and have voters decide in November. So they'll be kind of two bites of the apple. Based on what I heard today in Olympia, the legislative preview, they're not going to adopt a single one of these things because Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, who would be one of, if not the most powerful Democrat in the House or the Senate, she has a utter disdain, I found out today, for the initiative process.
I guess I'll just make a few comments about this. I'm very saddened when I think about why the initiative process was established in this state. To, you know, have a populist approach to, I mean, it was really like the big railroad barons that folks didn't want taking over the state, and they wanted the people to be able to legislate. So now what do we have is an ultra wealthy multimillionaire buying his way onto the ballot and putting initiatives on the ballot that are going to benefit his ultra wealthy status. That said, they're there. So I think we have to deal with them.
Wow. So she says that, and I just thought, I mean, my jaw probably dropped if the camera was on me, because it just felt condescending, I think, toward Washingtonians who have a brain and can think for themselves. Regardless of who's sponsoring the initiatives exist, and people are smart enough to read them, to learn about them, and to decide whether they want to sign them. To make some sort of suggestion, which is how it came across to me, that these 400,000 plus people who signed, you know, all six of them were coerced into doing it by some millionaire who benefits from it. Now, my bigger issue with her comment in vilifying Brian Haywood, who is financially backing these initiatives, is her moral hypocrisy. Because she has said nothing in the past when rich men backed initiatives that she agreed with.
You mentioned the millionaire backing these initiatives, Brian Haywood, and that it's an effort to buy policy. Did you speak out against Paul Allen and Nick Hanauer spending millions of dollars on Initiative 1639, which strengthened gun control in 2018?
What did 1639 do?
Strengthen gun control. They spent millions of dollars on it as billionaires. So do you feel the same way about that investment?
I do think that the initiative process is established in Washington State. What was set out. I'm not an originalist, but it is sad that when big financial interests take over a process. The good thing I think about Initiative 1639 is that it was something that was overwhelmingly supported by voters in Washington State. If not every county in the state, nearly every county in the state voted in favor of that initiative, if I remember correctly. So I don't remember what I spoke about or what I didn't speak about.
We know what you spoke about and what you didn't speak about. We have searched all the deep corners of the internet, and we cannot find any example of House Speaker Lori Jenkins speaking out about Paul Allen and Nick Hanauer giving $1 million each to the initiative pushing new firearm regulations in Washington State in 2018. So she's vilifying a millionaire for backing six initiatives and says nothing about, and even refuses there to condemn, two richer men than Brian Haywood, far richer, who spent more money backing an initiative that got far fewer signatures than any of the six initiatives that we're talking about right now. Tell me how that makes sense. It doesn't. The other thing I just want to correct and clarify there is when she said this.
The good thing I think about Initiative 1639 is that it was something that was overwhelmingly supported by voters in Washington State. If not every county in the state, nearly every county in the state voted in favor of that initiative, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you don't remember correctly, because that's not true. Like, that's not true at all, not even close. In fact, twice as many counties in Washington State voted against Initiative 1639. It still passed because, of course, the counties that mattered in Washington State for voting, the most populous counties, King, Pierce, Snohomish, they voted in favor of it. But to suggest blindly, I guess, to the best of her recollection, when just a few minutes earlier she acted as if she'd never heard of 1639 in her life and needed me to explain it to her to give her time to think about how she would answer my legitimate question pointing out her moral hypocrisy. Now all of a sudden she's an expert on 1639 and remembers that every county in the state, or almost every county in the state, voted in favor of it when in fact twice as many voted against it. So a lot of L's happening down in Olympia today. So a couple more sound bites from Lori Jenkins. So she said that, you know, regardless of how she feels about the initiative process and a millionaire backing it, doesn't like them, she feels confident that when these go to voters, they will do the right thing.
I do look forward to the conversation with Washington voters, because I do think when you think about some of these initiatives, I really have a great deal of confidence in the voters in Washington State that they, for example, don't want seniors to have to spend themselves into poverty before they can get some sort of long-term care. That they, I have confidence in the voters in the state that they believe our investments in K-12 education and in child care really need to increase, not be decreased by eliminating the capital gains tax on a few ultra-wealthy people in this state. And I don't think the voters in this state particularly want to turn our backs on climate change and quit addressing climate change.
So she has confidence in voters to do the right thing, but apparently she doesn't have confidence in the voters who signed the initiatives or think very much of them at all.
You know, you said that you have a great deal of confidence in voters if these do end up going on the ballot in November to make the decisions that you would like them to make on these initiatives. But, you know, it came during a comment where you're dismissing out of hand by attributing it to a millionaire buying policy. The fact that more than 400,000 people signed each and every one of these. So for Washingtonians who hear that comment, who did sign the initiatives because they're struggling under the weight of increased gas prices, because they're dealing with crime issues related to police pursuit, what do you say to them if your comments come off as dismissive?
Yeah, I don't think they're dismissive at all. I just think that when you put a premium on the head of every signature, it motivates people to say lots of things to get people to sign initiatives. So the actual campaign that happens when there's a real dialogue about what the impacts of the initiative are, that's the thing that tells me where Washington, what Washingtonians are really supporting. I have no doubt, and you know, have my own personal experiences with financial stresses and financial pressures. But if you want to get into an argument about how all the signatures were gathered, I guess we could get into an argument about that. And the number of people that I've had who've come to me who said, I think I just signed something. This is what they told me. Is that what it does? And I said, no, that's not exactly what it does. And I don't think there are 400,000 people who were all misled. I think there are people who really, you know, we'll vote for it and believe in it. What I'm looking forward to is a dialogue in which each campaign makes their case and voters really get a fuller perspective of what the consequences of these initiatives are, what's likely to happen as a result of them, and then can make their decisions about what they want Washington to do.
So if she really believes that, then there shouldn't be any issue with these initiatives going to voters. She shouldn't have any problem with the initiative process. After all, initiatives don't automatically create a law. Initiatives don't automatically undo laws. They'll have to go through the legislature. If they don't do anything, then they'll have to go to the voters. And if, as she believes, the vast majority of Washington voters don't want to undo these things, then they won't. And at the end of the day, that's fine. You know, but she's suggesting there, first of all, that you guys are a bunch of idiots who got tricked into signing something. You didn't know what you were signing. And I just fundamentally disagree that there was even a small fraction of people who were so lied to and so incapable of reading the paper that was right in front of them that they signed something that they did not know what it would do. So it's another example of just insulting the intelligence of voters. But she also acts as if the left doesn't lie and Democrats haven't lied about these initiatives. They have. They've lied a lot about these initiatives. They have employed horrible tactics to try to stop people from signing them, to try to harass the paid signature gatherers, the volunteer signature gatherers. So let's not act as if either side is squeaky clean when it comes to not lying about policies that the other side is pursuing or actions the other side is taking. There will be a lot of lies about these initiatives. Will there be lies about them? Have there been? I don't know. Sure. I haven't read every single thing that's been written about it. But voters should steel themselves for that. It's just frustrating to me that something that is, and we'll move on to other topics that aren't legislative. I think what's deeply frustrating to me is everyone who believes in our democracy should be celebrating these initiatives. It doesn't mean that you have to vote for them, but for her to say that she's saddened by the initiative process and what it's become, to get that many people within a few months to sign that many initiatives because they're so passionate about the issues is awesome. It's an awesome part of our democracy. And to have the Speaker of the House talk about it in that way, that is what's sad. All right, if you have a rental property in Seattle or Tacoma, you know, and in fact, I had Daniel, one of our viewers, just send me a anti-landlord law introduced in Olympia. So maybe, like we said, whatever happens in Seattle eventually finds its way to Olympia. So a lot of small mom-and-pop landlords are really going to be struggling to decide, do they keep their rental units or not? You know, we've told stories about the Seattle landlord, Jason Roth, who was like virtually homeless, living in his van, had some guy who wouldn't pay rent, who'd essentially become a squatter. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, not only is he a real estate agent, but he also owns a couple rental properties in Seattle and Tacoma. He said that he's heard stories very similar to Jason Roth's in his neighborhood.
There is a friend of mine in my neighborhood who has a rental home, and somebody moved in 18 months ago and never paid, you know, got some charity, you know, to pay a portion of it, and now is behind over the last 8 months. Has never paid, you know, has never paid personally, and come to find out more recently that tenant is a repeat offender and did this to another neighbor in my neighborhood the previous 2 years, and kind of hid behind, you know, those COVID laws, you know, that had come up with the eviction moratorium.
Yeah. And so there's not a lot of avenues for people who really are on the margins, who just have a couple rental properties. And if you aren't getting paid rent in one of them, it could be really troublesome for you financially. And so if you're thinking about or need some advice on whether, you know, the market is right to sell your rental properties, reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, dipping outside Washington State quickly before Florida report, one of the worst headlines I've ever seen. Stuff's expensive. Let me just tell you a story about eggs really quickly. I have said, and maybe this is a conflict of interest I have. So you know J.T. Wilcox, the former House Minority Leader. His family owns Wilcox Family Farms. So back in the day, when I was on TV, I went out to the Wilcox Family Farm, which is in the shadow of Mount Rainier. It's glorious. Mm-hmm. Green, river, mountain, sun. Happy little chickens just with plenty of room, just clucking around. Uh-huh. I was like, I want to live in the chicken barn because it was so nice. So ever since then, I went down there to interview him about politics. But ever since I saw how happy the chickens were and how well taken care of they were, mm-hmm. I was like, I'm only buying Wilcox eggs. I'm sure there's some other farms that are nice, but I haven't been to those. Yeah. I've been to this one. I saw the chickens. Those are the only eggs I'm buying. JT, I went to the store the other day, $7.99 for a dozen.
Whoa.
Like, I'm still loyal.
Because I have to have him on.
Because I saw the happy chickens. However, that's getting pretty close to me ditching you for less superior eggs, I will say.
For the poor chickens that are stuck in cages that you see on the freeway.
But here's what I bring this
poor
up.
Poor babies.
A Wall Street Journal has an article out. To save money, maybe you should skip breakfast.
I mean, intermittent fasting is kind of a thing now.
Can't afford groceries? Just don't eat. It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's where we are now.
I mean, that's, I would not
welcome
be shocked.
Biden's world.
Yeah, if I saw Biden saying, hey, instead of his usual, like when...
You know, he was actually just asked to what he ate and no breakfast foods were mentioned. It was ice cream, pasta, something else, but it wasn't breakfast.
Because it says several breakfast staples saw sharp price increases due to a perfect storm of bad weather and disease outbreaks and continued effects from Russia's invasion of Ukraine and, of course, increased gas prices in Washington because everything that comes by vehicle costs more money. So that might be why the Wilcox family farm eggs seem to have gotten a little more expensive. We should have JT on.
We should.
Okay, work on that.
Actually, he told us we needed to come out there again because it's changed a lot. And
it's beautiful out there. Beautiful out there. I mean, I can still cover anything JT does in an unbiased fashion whilst consuming his family's eggs.
Maybe we'll get a couple of freebies.
No freebies. That's what I'm paying for them. They're not free. Nicole doesn't have the journalistic sensibilities that I have.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah, so that's some advice for you.
Not
I just thought
from the chickens. Nicole,
animals do love Nicole. So she'll be under the chickens in the coop. Just wait until they plop one out. it's from the chickens. It's like, no, you stole that. Anyway, yeah. So if you can't afford groceries, if you can't afford groceries, just don't eat. That's the next advice we're going to hear from Governor Inslee. Mad about gas prices? Just don't drive, which is essentially what they're saying anyway.
It is.
All right. It is Thursday after all. And Miranda was nice enough to, it's 3 hours ahead in Florida. She was nice enough to stay up late to join us for an edition of our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello, welcome to Undivided After Dark.
Hello.
Fits your mood better than during the day because you're all goth and stuff.
Yes, yes, I love doing this at the dark times.
So dark. All right, a member of the Florida Proud Boys who participated in the January 6th riot at our nation's capital, he was on house arrest while he was waiting for all this to happen, and then the guy vanished. Well, apparently, he's been convicted, and he's going to serve 10 years in prison. Have they found the guy?
Yes, they found him. He tried to sneak back into his own house, and then they found him, and then he faked a drug overdose so he could delay his sentencing a little bit more. He does have a form of cancer, like lymphoma, and he said that he was afraid for his life, not getting the right treatment in prison, but the court has ensured him he will get the proper treatment during his 10-year sentence in prison for, I believe he maced an officer.
Yeah, he's one of the ones who pepper sprayed an officer, and that's very serious to me. And I said early on, you assaulted an officer, I want you in federal prison. I feel the same way about BLM rioters in Seattle. You belong in federal prison. I'll know I'll get the crowd that's like, political prisoners. I do think some of them are kind of political prisoners at this point. When you look at how much the left is left, like let off for political violence versus 20-something year prison sentences, it's absolutely wild. I love that, like, the Proud Boy member who has the most interesting arrest stories in Florida. That just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there was like, I think, 36 Proud Boys arrested in the whole Jan 6 thing. So they had a lot of people showing up during that whole situation.
Sounds about right. Honestly, though, if I were going to go and I knew I was going to prison for 10 years, I'd run away.
Yeah, for sure. But I wouldn't try to sneak back into my own house.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not even going to blame him because I totally would have run away. I would have faked whatever, 100%. Okay, this one's right up your alley because we've been having a little family dispute over the rabbits you had before you almost died, whether the rabbits should come back home, etc. So this one really struck me as a Miranda story. Click Orlando says, Florida bunny bill hopes to curb sales of unwanted rabbits. Provide rescue relief. Isn't that how you wound up having so many rabbits, is they were unwanted?
Yes. So Florida has a huge issue with people releasing their domestic rabbits into the wild, and then they breed very quickly, as we all know, and they create these colonies that, it's sad because, you see like stray dogs, stray cats, but stray bunnies, they're colonies of hundreds. They also destroy gardens. They eat people's lawns. There's a lot of issues with it. There's only a few rescues, and I work very close with one through my bunny incident. I rescued two bunnies. I was told they were both girls, and they were not. So I wound up with also, I'll put it in air quotes, unwanted bunnies, because I love my bunnies, and I could live on a farm with 100 if people would let me. But so it is nice to see that they're pushing to assist not only the rescues, but just trying to like curb the whole issue of selling rabbits around Easter in stores. They're going to require possible microchips in rabbits sold at stores so that people can be held responsible for their rabbits, or the store can be held responsible for the rabbits
if they let it go.
And in addition to that, they're looking at increasing the age the rabbit has to be for sales, because it can be 3 months before you know what sex a rabbit is, and they can reproduce before you know if they're a male or a female,
obviously,
which is what happened to me.
Yeah.
So I'm now an expert at telling whether a rabbit is a male or a female because I have taken classes through the rescue, but it is an absolute problem. It's very sad. I think anybody that's into animals, whether they're dogs or cats or anything, can probably understand that you know, just kind of being an advocate for the animals is important. It's just part of our responsibility to the community and the bunnies.
That there's a Florida bill that mirrors so closely what you've been going through with your rabbits. Did you tell someone to introduce this?
No, but I have talked to the rabbit rescue that I worked with. You know, when I went in the hospital, you guys helped me rehome so many bunnies, all my baby bunnies. And they were moving them all over the state of Florida to different rescues just because they're so depleted. Like the rescue I work with in particular had 150 rabbits and guinea pigs in foster care. And I talked to the owner of that rescue on multiple occasions about what they're doing to try to introduce bills or to try to push for some sort of assistance from the government. And I have no doubt in my mind that the girl I worked with had something to do with this because she's dedicated probably every second of her life to helping these little creatures. So. Yeah,
I remember us trying to, even though you were almost like dying before our eyes, we still couldn't find new homes for your bunnies. So it is a problem. Yeah. And now you're the expert on it. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Gosh, a story I didn't fit in before we go to questions and comments. So we talked about the chicken checks all week. I should have pulled this today. We just had so much content today. So we've been talking about Bob Ferguson sends out these rebate checks for the, from this tuna and chicken settlement, then just randomly sends them out to people that Experian tells them are low income, but a lot of them are going to dead people. So one of the other people who's been pressing this issue a lot and seeking answers is Washington GOP chairman Jim Walsh. So Jim Walsh gets, like, just yesterday, after he's been raising heck about this issue on social media, he tweets out a picture. He got to his house one of these chicken checks addressed to his late wife, which is so sad. And she passed away in 2022 in a car accident. And it was just like, oh my gosh, what are the chances of that? But it just shows you so many people are getting checks for their deceased loved ones. And just the coincidence of all coincidences that Jim Walsh got one too. But this issue is so widespread. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around it because the amount we've gotten alone is just insane. So we still see no response from Brianna?
Not to the latest follow-up, but I also reached out to the company that they keep blaming.
Experian,
and they have not responded to me either.
But you tell them that I will cancel my Experian subscription if they don't respond.
I will tell them. I should have included that.
Yeah, you should have, but you didn't, so. All right, before we get to questions.
Anyway. Yeah.
Before we get to questions and comments today, I don't know if you saw the first couple days of the year, stock market went bananas, but what has Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital taught us on the show? Do not live or die by the stock market. Certainly don't use the stock market as your sole gauge of whether your retirement is protected. He also is warning us, be very cautious going into 2024 because it's an election year and there is no telling what level of lies will be told to make you believe that the economy is doing just fine. So you've talked a lot about not only some of the indicators that we should see about what it's going to spell economically for 2024, but you've also talked about what 2024 and the political environment and the presidential race, et cetera, how that could impact what's being told to the American people. So as a risk manager, how do you see through like the complete bullshit that is absolutely a political spin on a situation versus reality?
Yeah, so historically, that has not been as tough as it is now. Right. It used to be markets were really good at calling out the BS. Right. Now they run on it. And I think there's probably a ton of different reasons for that. But that's one of the tough things about. Well, look, I think it's one of the tough things about the environment right now. Right. You've got an administration in there telling you that everything's great and everything's been better. And it's still hard for me to even say this out loud because it's such a ridiculous assertion, right? The Fed can say all day long they're not political. They are. They're human beings. They're political. And you could probably pull up 100 different examples to back that statement up. But I think one of the toughest things about this cycle is, and I think part of the reason is because this cycle has been more driven by political machinations than any cycle in history. And people are like, well, what do you mean by that? Go look at our debt, right?
one of the biggest reasons you got $34 trillion in debt is because of the ludicrous spending that's been occurring since the moment we left the financial crisis, right? And a lot of the knock-on effects of that have been anesthetized by central bank action, printing of money, special purpose vehicles, all different things the Fed's done. So long story short, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to sit there and go, okay, how far along down the path is the BS going to work? And it's a tricky game, but we want to keep at least one foot on the wagon until we reach that part. But we're looking for that bump in the road going, all right, guys, get ready to jump, get ready to jump. And people are like, oh, you're trying to time the market. Sort of, because when inflation becomes the issue and the government is willing to print ad infinitum, the minute they crank that printing press up again, they're going to push everything back up, right? So they're kind of making you time the market in a way. So we're not trying to do that. That's one of the reasons we have a good amount of a ton of money in short-term bonds piled up right now. The stocks we do own are very rock solid dividend type paying stocks. And I just think it's time to really collect some good income here and see the way things play out, because this is just not a market that is offering a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, well, better someone like you to try to read the tea leaves of what's going on and wade through the BS than me, frankly. But all right, Zach Abraham, we appreciate it as always.
Thank you for having me on. Fun as always. We'll see you soon.
And you can get more honest, realistic advice about especially risk associated with retirement portfolios if you're getting close. It's really important to pay attention to that in 2024. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. I keep putting 2023 on things. I feel like that's kind of normal, though. For the first month, you're just not used to changing the date.
Listeners and viewers didn't even notice.
The other day when it was in on the Monday, title. Right?
We not put one it, person.
Nobody
I don't
said
think,
anything. I mean, at least didn't say anything.
Probably send me a screenshot of him noticing.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to questions and comments from the live stream. Let me see. Liz says, "I look like a tequila woman." Is that about me or you?
I guess so. I think it's about you.
Because I'm drinking whiskey. I didn't have any tequila. I will drink tequila when we're like at some like special party or something. But tequila is the only booze that like makes me feel whoo. Like I'm, because I go to bed early.
It really
right?
does give you that adrenaline or a little caffeine that it has in it or whatever. But that's actually something that's been growing on me. Tequila. I've never been a tequila fan. And lately I've been into it.
Oh, you know what I hate though? Mezcal. That's enough to
just by the smell.
All right, let me see here. UW football fan says, go Cougs. I mean, it is 49 pennies. He was kind of right. True. Governor Inslee never specified how many pennies, although he followed up his it'll be pennies comment by saying, or even lower than it is right now, which obviously isn't true. Julie Hafen says, nicely done, Brandy. It's not easy to speak rationally with the irrational master gaslighter's going to gaslight. And that's what's tough, because I hate asking like really long, drawn out questions. But I felt like I had to spell it out for him to try to make him realize how absurd it is that he continues to deny this. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, I really did have to go point for point with him and then be like, and?
Well, and then he just gave him a taste of his own
tactics. Well,
that's
true, yes. Michael Down says, Jay stole $30 car tabs from 53% of Washington. That's the other point. And you mm-hmm. made it when we were in between clips and you were telling me, you know, Lori Jenkins wants to bash Brian Haywood for being a millionaire and trying to buy policy. Tim Iman did so many successful initiatives, and he wasn't an ultra wealthy millionaire guy who was spending a bunch of his own money. He was out, he was fundraising from people. And I know that he eventually, I mean, Bob Ferguson set out to ruin his life, but he did get car tabs through with not millions of dollars of his own money. Voters voted for it. And then the state's like, no,
they
like- don't care. That's the issue. They don't care. And we'll talk about that sanity check as well. But, you know, you can do it with a millionaire. Bad. Mm-hmm. You can do it with grassroots donations, volunteers. Bad. Oh, they can do it with 1639 to get more gun control. Two billionaires that are more wealthy than anyone that's ever funded any conservative initiative in Washington State until the end of time. A plus.
Yeah. We rule.
That to me is the... that's the I've been it's up late. Since 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. That to me is the issue why I don't like the two-party system. We talk about that a lot on the show, but Democrats are the only ones who are in a position to do stuff like that. Republicans aren't. I mean, if they were, I'm sure I'd have the same complaints about it, but they're simply not. I'm not saying they're irrelevant, but for these purposes, they are irrelevant. And so Democrats, drunk on one-party rule for the last 8 years, one-party control of the governor's office for the last 40 years, they truly believe, Inslee truly believes that he can get away with this stuff. And he's been the governor for 3 terms. So maybe he can.
That's why.
That's why. They can. And that's incredibly frustrating to me because I can sit there and point out to Lori Jenkins the obvious moral hypocrisy. Like, okay, you're going to bash this millionaire, but you're perfectly fine with the billionaire's buying policy. Oh, I can't recall if I ever said anything. What is 1639 again? And then she's like, oh, 1639 passed in every county in the state. You didn't even know what it was 2 minutes ago. What are you even talking about? Mm-hmm. Matt Gilbert, Inslee is good. I should go down to these more often. I miss it. I miss it. I will say, fun. Because my background is as a political journalist, for those of you who follow me long enough, and there are days where I miss that, you know, and we do, you know, we do journalism on the show and investigations, but it's different when you're down in the in the midst of it. So maybe I'll go down more often this session.
I like that idea.
It's hard with the show in the middle of the day. All right.
But this is working too. Tell us if you like it. Do you like the night show?
I don't want to do a show once in a while. I'm such a morning bird. Matt Gilbert, Inslee's going to blame it on the rain because the rain don't mind and the rain don't care. Is that
blame it on the rain.
I've never heard that song.
What?
I don't know what song that
is. I actually thought you might know it.
I am the last one. Maybe if somebody sang it better to me. Maybe if, sing it better.
That's as good as I can get. Yeah, I'm a little raspy. Right.
Carlene Heath says, Brandy Cruz, now I see why you're in need of a whiskey night. Yeah, I grabbed it last minute. Should I give him another free commercial? You know, I love to support local business. Not an ad. No payment exchanged. Although I did buy this. About
you
a whole,
did.
We served this at my wedding.
Yeah.
Because we went down to Sandstone Distillery in Tenino for the celebration. Because when Tenino parents were fighting against the sex offender house, I said on the air, if you win this fight, I'll come down and party with you. They threw a party at Sandstone Distillery. And they were the nicest, the sweetest, and had been big Dory fans and all that. And I bought a case of their whiskey for the wedding, and we served it at the wedding, and I had a leftover bottle. So it was really good. It was a really fun environment. We listened to some live music. So go support local business.
I'm kind of jealous. Just opening a distillery in your backyard.
I know.
It was a really fun place.
So nice. Weiss Castle says, those who scream the loudest that we need to save our democracy hate leaving decisions to the voters. That's the thing. At the end of the day, voters are going to vote. Do you really? I mean, that's what Lori's saying there is, I mean, she used the word sad when talking about these initiatives. She said she was sad. You're sad that voters are participating in the democratic process? That's strange. Because I thought democracy was in peril. I guess you're the one who wants to put it in jeopardy. Dingleberry Field says, Wilcox told me their egg prices were only going to go up in pennies, maybe even lower. Well, sounds about right. UW football fan, we'll fit in one more from you. You can buy 4 chickens and have all of the free eggs you want. Breakfast is not the most important meal. Your body has enough energy already to get to lunch. Breakfast should always be light. I actually don't do breakfast that much anymore, but on weekends, sometimes I like a couple eggs. All right.
Bacon.
Shelley Rowe says domestic feral rabbits are a problem in Tacoma too. You know, they also used to be a problem. What's
on the island?
Discovery Park would always have, and they'd have little signs saying, don't feed the rabbits. They don't belong here. People just abandon them here and they'd be adorable. And I'd be like, oh, I want to take you home and then abandon you a month later.
Who does that?
People are just crazy. Okay. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. I love this. 7 p.m. Here we are having a great time. We still have work to do after this, that's why I haven't gone full bore on the whiskey drink. But first, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team are absolutely amazing. Not only do they offer you personal help as you go through the program, they also man a handy little app. So you got an app on your phone. It's sending you videos every day talking about where you're at in the process. And I know this from experience. If you don't log in the app and check in, you might get a message saying, hey, where you been? What are you doing? What are you eating? How's it going? Which I actually really like the accountability built into that. I lost 37 pounds on the program, found a lot of success. So I have many, many undivided viewers and listeners. No counting calories, no prepackaged meals, no drugs or injections. They just teach you what to eat in the right portions. And then you drop weight fast, and then they help you keep it off for life. And you can easily go back to it. So check them out, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation. You'll just go over any questions you have about the program before you commit, which is very smart because you don't want to start a weight loss program when you don't even know what it is or what it entails or if it's right for you, because not every weight loss program is right for every person. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, let's get to our closing. Deep breaths. Drink whatever you've got in front of you, and let's get to our closing sanity check. You know, there's something so nice about drinking whiskey out of my brand new cup. My best friend is calling me. Hold on FaceTime.
Oh, no.
Hold on. We've been putting people live on the show lately. Hey, you're live on the Undivided Podcast. Don't swear. Don't incriminate yourself. Don't incriminate me. Love you. I've got to go, though.
Okay. Hi.
Okay. Bye, Johnny in New York.
Okay. Love you. Bye.
They're like, Brandy, this late night stuff. You're off track. Closing sanity check. Governor Jay Inslee is a liar. I don't think I've ever said that sentence in that way. But at this point, there is no way around it. He has been presented with proof upon proof upon proof and a smoking gun on top of that, that there was every opportunity for him, for those around him, to know exactly what the cap and trade program would do, because it's doing exactly what it was intended to do, and to be honest with people about the impact that it would have on their lives. You know, if the governor believes this is the best thing to do for the environment, I disagree. I disagree. I think we can improve the environment without hurting working class people. If those are the only ideas you can come up with, man, I don't think public service is right for you. But I would have had a lot more respect for the governor if he'd owned the consequences of that policy and took the heat that came along with it. But he is completely unwilling to do that. Today, prove that to me for sure. After the Todd Myers article was released and the governor still would not admit, hey, we were wrong. And there's been a lot of opportunities throughout the last, I mean, I've covered the governor for all 11 and a half years of his time in office now. There's been a lot of opportunities for the governor and frankly, a lot of other politicians and presidents to just come out and have some humility and say, look, we did this. It had consequences beyond what we thought and we were wrong. And either continue with the policy and own those consequences or move away from the policy. The pandemic was a very good example. The governor could have come out and said, hey, we were scared. It was an unprecedented situation. We thought we had to fire people. We thought we had to put these extreme mandates in place. We were wrong about a lot of things. We got bad advice. That, to me, is a leader. And what Governor Inslee showed today is that he is not a leader. And regardless of what the outcome of the November election is, I'm hoping that we can get someone who understands that it's okay to be wrong and that it's okay to show a little humility, especially when the decisions you make have such a profound impact on people's lives. That has been it for today's nighttime episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. I will say on our Sunday show, we've got a pretty weighty topic. Of course, everybody's talking about the Epstein client lists. And, you know, I think the actual victims and the issue of human trafficking has been lost in all the political hubbub about who might be on his list and who might have gone to his island. So we're going to talk to two local people about human trafficking and sex trafficking right in our backyard, both a survivor of sex trafficking and a former law enforcement official who is working to disrupt sex trafficking operations across the world. So if you have not signed up already, please do so. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, just $5 a month to support our mission and our movement and catch that Sunday show. Bye, Nicole.
See ya.